This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And off we go into our number two. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you. Rocking and rolling through the foremost electrifying hours of sports talk entertainment that you are going to find anywhere, anytime, any day of the week. We got a stacked show for you today. We got Lulu Kessin coming up in about an hour from right now to talk Gamecock athletics. We got Rashad Beard at 8:40 coming by to talk Carolina Panthers, the host of the Panther Nation podcast. We got Hayton Ass Mario Heron for the Bet MGM Network at 9 o'clock. We'll talk about some of the draft prospects that are going to be out there. Big news about Abdul Carter. We're going to get to that coming up here in just a few minutes. He is absolutely going to be on the Panthers draft radar. And we got some big news out of him that may very well shift the availability of Abdul Carter when the Panthers go on the clock. We'll talk about that coming up here in just a little while with Hayton Ass Mario. 9 o'clock, then at 9:20, it's Thursday. You know what that means. Fight Club with the great one, Lonzo, as we've got Elimination Chamber in the barrel for this weekend. PLE for WWE. We'll get into that and a whole lot more as the show continues. But it is 7:02 in the morning. It is 7:02 a.m. You are now less than 58 minutes away from having to get your happy little behind into the office. Sit down. Pretend like you're going to work. Pretend like you're going to actually be a productive member of society. But we all know what you're doing. You're waiting, anticipating for the opportunity to stand up, to walk down the hallway, to say it's time for that smoke break. I don't even smoke, but I'm dadgum sure going to take my smoke break. To go find Bill from marketing. Bill's a nice guy. Creative mind. And you know us creative types, we love some sports. Always will. Always have. Go find Bill from marketing. Y'all are going to slip outside that back door. Go to that one spot just around the corner where you know the security cam that the boss checks every hour can't see you. And you're going to talk sports. It's our favorite part of the day, talking sports with Bill. Well, you got to know what's going on in the world of sports. And if you got to know what's going on in the world of sports, ladies and gentlemen, no worries. Lonzo and Rob are here to help you out with this. It is the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office this morning and start talking sports with your friends, family, coworkers, or your dog, whoever you spend your work day with. When you do, this is what you will be talking about. Let us dive right in with item number one. The Americans' streak of She Believes Cups has ended at 5. Team USA had an opportunity to get by Team Japan last night to try to capture cup number 6, but they fall 2-1 as the Japanese avenge their quarterfinal loss in the Olympics to claim the cup for the first time. 2-1 your final score. It was also the first loss for new manager Emma Hayes, her first defeat since taking charge of the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team. Japan got off to a dream start just 2 minutes in when U.S. keeper Jane Campbell collided with one of the defenders in front of the goal. Yuka Mamiki was able to gather the ball, fired into an open net for the early lead. The U.S. regrouped under heavy defensive pressure from Japan, but they quickly tied the game when Ali Sentnor scored her first goal for the Americans back on Thursday against Colombia. She got goal number 2, was able to pick up an assist from Katarina Macario and calmly curl a pass, a shot past the keeper to make it 1-1 just before the 15-minute mark. Japan started the second half like it did the first with an early goal. Campbell got a free kick kept out by Japan, but the save fell to the feet of Toko Kogo, slotted home the rebound to give her team the second and final lead of the game. The U.S. had a couple of second half changes, but could not find a way back into the game. However, I think, required to point out that Team USA was playing without Mallory Swanson, without Trinity Rodman, and without Sophia Smith-Wilson. Rodman rehabbing a back injury. Smith was not yet in game form, and Swanson was out for personal commitments. So, arguably the three best players on the team for Team USA not available for this tournament. Still had high hopes and aspirations for Emma Hayes in her first major orchestrated organized tournament. The Americans make it to the championship game, but fall to Japan 2-1. They will regather before we get to the Gold Cups on the women's side and all that moving forward. Let us get to item number 2. We spent quite a bit of time talking about this back in the first hour of the show. I have sneaky high suspicion that it will make its way back into the conversation as we move towards the end of the show. The NFL is considering 2 major rules changes ahead of the 2025 NFL season. Those two rule changes are as follows, according to Troy Vincent, the NFL's vice president of football operations. Rule change number 1 that is up for discussion is to adopt the NFL's postseason overtime rules as the NFL's regular season overtime rules. As it stands right now, in the regular season, Team A gets a possession. If Team A scores a touchdown on the opening possession, Team A wins. If Team A does anything else, Team B gets a possession. If they match, we begin sudden death. If they are able to be superior in their result, they're able to outscore Team A, they win the game. That is not the case in postseason NFL play. In postseason NFL play, Team A gets the ball regardless of result. Even if it is a touchdown, Team B then gets a possession with the football. If Team B matches a touchdown, now it is sudden death. If Team B has a superior result to Team A, they win. If they have an inferior result, the game is over. The NFL is discussing moving its postseason overtime rules into the regular season, meaning in every NFL game that ends regulation in a tie, both teams will be guaranteed one possession. It is a step in the right direction. To me, as I've said a couple of times so far this morning and will continue to do so, the one place that college football is superior to the NFL is its overtime rules. I would love to see the NFL ultimately adopt college football's overtime rules. I doubt that will ever happen, but this is a step in that direction. Those two proposals will be in front of the competition committee sometime over the next few weeks. If the competition committee agrees that they are acceptable and commendable, then they will go up for a vote before the owners meet next month, or when the owners meet next month in Palm Beach, Florida. The second rule that is being discussed is an advancement in the virtual ball spotting tech, the virtual measuring system. Now, again, we talked a lot about this back in the first hour. If you missed it, you can go to thefanupstate.com, go to the podcast section, download the first hour of the show, and listen to it on demand. We got into this quite a bit. Like I said, probably going to come back up later on in the show. What is being discussed right now is for the NFL to begin utilizing the virtual measuring system next year in regular season NFL games. It will not replace side judges. There will only be one aspect of the game where the virtual measuring system, the VMS, will come into play. The only thing it will be responsible for, according to the rule change that is being proposed, is awarding first downs on close spots. Did he, didn't he? Right? Talking tush push. We're talking Derrick Henry getting stacked up at the line to gain. We're talking about Patrick Mahomes scrambling out to the right side, making a run at the sticks and getting right up to the line. And we got a little contention about where the ball was when he was whistled out of bounds. The only thing this virtual measuring system will do is say first down awarded, first down denied, nothing else. When the play is blown dead, the side judge will still call whether the clock is to stop or continue to run. The side judge will still spot the ball. The side judge will still be in charge of putting the ball in the right place for play. The only thing that will happen is that the referee will have a little signaler on him, wristwatch, maybe a little mic in the cap like the pitch comm in Major League Baseball, maybe a little buzzer, little beeper on his waistband like we all had back in our middle school days. And that little buzzer or beeper or microphone or headset or wristwatch or whatever will say first down or not first down and nothing else. So those of you that are all worried about all these poor umpires and referees that are going to be out of jobs moving forward, even though I've explained to you many times they will not be, all of you that are worried about it, we're not. The side judges are still in charge. The only thing that this measuring system, virtual measuring system, is going to be is utilized to determine if a close call at the yard of gain is a first down or not. Nothing more, nothing less. We'll see how it goes in year one. My suspicion is that those of you that are anti-Robo One, I'm going to win most of you over with this.
Can they change the name to index card system?
Why would we change it to index card system?
You don't remember the index card to check for the first down?
Oh, God. Oh, Lord. Yeah, you know, back when they just kind of arbitrarily put the ball somewhere on the field where the refs thought it was, and then we acted as if you needed a damn scientific laboratory to determine if it was
my idea, but I think it's a great idea.
Item number three. Clemson's pretty good. Clemson's pretty good at basketball. They get a 83-68 win over the Notre Dame Fighting Irish yesterday. 24 points and 9 boards from Ann Shefflin. 32 minutes of action out of the Chef last night. 24-9-3 was his final stat line. Victor Lackett, 18 points and 5 boards to go with 5 assists last night for Clemson. They ran away from Notre Dame. I mean, this there was never really a question mark about Clemson's W in this game. 83-68, and frankly, it wasn't that close. Clemson had a 41-31 lead at the half. They kind of were even able to slow it up just a little bit late in the game. Brad Brownell's squad was, again, I'm not going to say dominant, but they didn't need to be. They didn't need to be. This team is now one game off of Duke for the ACC lead right now. They've got, just as they take a 5-game win streak, they've got 3 games left to play. On March 1st, they are on the road at Virginia. They get a 4-day break before they are on the road at Boston College, and then they get a 3-day break before they return home for their final game of the year against Virginia Tech. Virginia is 14-14, 7-10 in conference. Boston College is 12-16, 4-13 in conference. Virginia Tech is 12-16, 7-10 in conference. This could not be a better finish to the season for Clemson. Not just because they have got effectively the bottom of the barrel remaining in the ACC, which is good news. It's also because Duke's got three interesting games left ahead of them. Duke's got a Florida State team that has nothing left but pride to play for. A team that Clemson beat by, 100 last week? Then they've got Wake Forest. Y'all, Steve Forbes is an interesting coach there at Wake Forest. The Demon Deacons are 19-9. That's not a bad basketball team that Wake Forest has put together. Duke's likely to win that game. But it's March, or it will be on March 3rd when they play each other. There's madness afoot. And then they end in what I think the biggest game remaining on Clemson's schedule ain't on Clemson's schedule. Duke has got to go to North Carolina. They have got to take on the Tar Heels, who are 18-11, 11-6 in conference, and very much potentially a bubble team. The North Carolina Tar Heels likely have to get a couple of big wins to guarantee themselves a spot in the tournament. They have just one big game remaining. They do have a game against Miami, but Miami stinks, which is why Larenaga walked away. They've got a game on the road at Virginia Tech on March 4th, but UNC Duke ends on March 8th. At UNC in Chapel Hill. And I shall remind all of you that in the ACC right now, the Clemson Tigers tied with Duke. There is the potential. It's a long shot. There is the potential out there that when it's all said and done, the tiebreaker, which is the season series sweep, could come into play. And if it does, Clemson holds that mark right now over the Duke Blue Devils. Now, again, still very interesting because the Louisville Cardinals are right there. They are 15-2. Louisville knocked off Clemson earlier in the year. So you will also need the Louisville Cardinal to take a loss somewhere down the line. Louisville is currently 15-2, 22-6 overall. Louisville has Pitt, Cal, and Stanford left on the 1st, the 5th, and the 8th, respectively. There is a path. It is a long and winding one, but a path nonetheless for the Clemson Tigers to still win the ACC and get that double bye in the ACC tournament. We'll find out. We're going to talk about that. We'll keep an eye on that moving forward. There is a path. You're going to need some help. Far from a guarantee, but the possibility's out there. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back here in just a minute. From right now, we got a lot of NFL draft talk we got to get to. We got a lot of NFL draft talk because Abdul Carter is back in the news. He is without a doubt, I have to imagine, a top potential pick for the Carolina Panthers. We're going to get into what the news is regarding him and how it might impact the Panthers draft. We got to get some of the other players that have begun to announce that they will not work out at the combine. The physical combine, the workouts start today. So what should we be looking for? Talk about that and a whole lot more. Rob Brown, the Great Milonzo, and you, the Rob Brown Show's audio radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Put a putting, what'd you call that, ball returner, like an auto ball returner here in the studio. And I've learned two things about myself. Number one, if I make a handful in a row, I am so compelled to keep going. Number two, if I miss, I am compelled to keep going. This thing's a problem. I probably should get rid of it. Second thing I've learned is this.
Except it's not yours. I mean, so you can't get rid of something.
No, but
that
I should say take it out of here because I spent that entire commercial break knocking down putts.
You also set up the camera so people could see you make the putts.
Hey, how many times have I told you I believe in accountability? If I'm missing putts, I need to be shamed for it. I am made better as a person by shame.
None of us all are. None of us here would shame you for any reason at all.
You clearly have stopped watching the chat during the live streams. Very clearly. Which all of you, by the way, can join us on our live stream. Facebook.com/TheFanUpstate. The Fan Upstate on YouTube or Twitter. The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, or on Twitch. Come hang out in the live stream. Jacob's in here. Kane is in here. Zach is in there. Miss Lisa is in there. Everybody's in there. Texture said, Rob, you okay? You mispronounced Louisville.
Yeah, don't encourage that because it gets longer every time, and eventually it's gonna last a minute.
Challenge accepted.
It's already so gross, and you just guys are making it worse.
I'll tell you, the people from Louisville are very demanding about how you properly pronounce
their
name.
Don't make me retaste my sandwich that I just ate.
Just because we're talking about the Cardinals of Louisville.
There are people. Listen, it's 7:25 in the morning. People are enjoying their eggs and their biscuits and their gravy and their hash browns. They don't need to hear that thing that you just did.
I was talking ACC basketball. There's three good teams in the ACC, says Texter. Duke, Clemson, and Louisville. He said the rest of the conference is the bottom of the barrel. Don't disagree. All right. Let's get some more stuff in here, shall we? Because we've been kind of bouncing all over the place, spent a good bit of time talking about the two potential rule changes taking place in the NFL. Two rule changes that I am very in favor of. And we'll pick back up on that conversation a little bit later in the show. Abdul Carter, edge rusher, Pennsylvania State University, and a guy who, honestly, I could see being the number one overall pick. Like, everybody's dialed in on Cam Ward. Everybody's dialed in on Shador Sanders. Sure, it's a quarterback league. It would make sense that the two guys the most being discussed as number one overall picks are the two quarterbacks. Abdul Carter, I think, is got the potential to be a very special player in the National Football League. But we got a little news yesterday about Abdul Carter, the potential number one overall pick. He has a stress reaction in his right foot. We found that out yesterday during a medical test. And he has to decide whether he wants to have surgery or not, or at least that's what his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, had to say. Rosenhaus said yesterday night in Indianapolis, Indiana, according to Lonzo, according to Mario, the best sports city in America.
Don't put that on me.
I wouldn't dare. He said, quote, there are mixed opinions on whether he needs surgery, and we will figure that out in the near future. According to Rosenhaus, Carter has two options. Numero uno, he could have preemptive surgery, which would involve having a screw inserted in his right foot and returning to being able to work out and running in about 8 weeks, which would set him up roughly around rookie mini camp time. It would also mean he would be missing out workouts between here and there. Okay. Option numero dos is for him to bypass the surgery, not have bypass surgery. That's a different thing. Bypass the surgery, conduct his pro day at Penn State on March 28th, and prove to NFL teams that he does not need a procedure. Carter, his family, and his agents spent Wednesday consulting with doctors to gather more information. Rosenhaus, he expects Carter to make a decision sometime this week, but Rosenhaus said, quote, worst case scenario, we don't expect this to impact where he is drafted. Of course, a player and his player's agents not expecting something to impact where that player will be drafted is entirely unexpected, right? Shocking that they would say, of course, they don't expect that. But they ain't the ones doing the drafting, is they? Nah. The NFL teams decide where he is ultimately going to be drafted. This is something that could very well drop Abdul Carter down into a range where he is perhaps in play for the Carolina Panthers? Or it might not. Here's what I'll say overall. If there is any world, if there is any world where Abdul Carter ends up dropping down to being available to the Carolina Panthers at number 8, you better snag that dude on the real quick. Okay? I don't think he's going to. I don't expect it. I think if I'm a GM, I am willing to take the risk on Abdul Carter, even if he decides not to have the surgery, even if he decides that he is not going to get cut, even if he decides that he's just going to bypass it and hope everything turns out all right. And even if you think there's a chance that he's not going to, that it won't turn out all right, that he can't be good, do it anyway. Do it anyway. That dude is a stud. The draft profile for Abdul Carter is about as positive as I've seen in a very long time for an edge rusher. There's really nothing this cat doesn't do well off the edge. We'll talk to Rashad Beard about this, but I'm going to tell you right now, I still don't think he's available at 8. I still don't think, even with this news, he's making it to 8. The question you would have here is, are you, if you are Carolina, I'm not trading to 1. I'm not trading to 2. I'm not trading to 3. I'm not trading inside the top 3 for Abdul Carter. But let's say, hypothetically, Abdul Carter drops a little bit and he's there at 4. He's there at 5. Now I'm in. How much, if I'm Carolina, knowing I need edge rushers, but also knowing I need offensive linemen, knowing I need another defensive back, safety probably, knowing there's other spots that I genuinely have needs, how much are you willing to move up, and how much are you willing to give up to move up for Abdul Carter?
How much of a risk is this, though? I mean, it's a fractured foot that he didn't know about, or at least they hid, and the fact that it could require putting a pin in it. I don't know. I don't know if it's worth the risk. Do you think it's worth the risk?
So stress fractures, I know, are problematic because there's really only so much you can do to help them. There's really only so much that you can do to prevent them from becoming an issue that is reoccurring down the line. A stress reaction from the little bit of research that I was able to do this morning, because this, by the way, according to Drew Rosenhaus, take it with a grain of salt, his agent, take it with a grain of salt, they didn't find out about this until the draft combine test yesterday.
I had a broken foot, a stress fracture that I didn't know about till I tore ligaments in my ankle.
Sure.
And I mean, I know when it happened because the guy stepping on my foot, I remember vividly even this many years later, but I never got it checked out. And then when I tore the ligaments, they're like, hey, did you know your foot is fractured? I was like, no. And they said it's an old fracture. So, I mean, I think you can play through that sort of thing. And it's not that big of a deal, but I think it depends on where the fracture is, I guess.
The limited amount of research that I was able to do yesterday told me that a stress reaction is a response to repetitive stress or overuse on a bone, which, if left untreated, can progress to a stress fracture. It occurs when bones experience repeated impact or strain without enough time to recover. This is usually very common in the shin, in the hip, in the spine, and in the foot. The treatment is ordinarily rest and activity modification, ice and anti-inflammatory medication, supportive footwear, bracing, physical therapy, and a gradual return to activity, which obviously, it being the off season, Abdul Carter has got the time to take a load off, man. Maybe get into one of those fancy chairs with the leg massagers and stuff and whatnot, right? But again, I am intrigued in the impact this might have based on, are there maybe teams that were looking at him 1, 2, 3, 4 that might go, yeah, I mean, stress fractures can be very problematic. Not in terms of time missed.
Would you pass on him?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I don't know.
I would still be willing, and obviously this would be on the advice of not just my team physicians, but like every physician at the combine. I'd want to talk to every doctor that I could get in front of this cat. I would 100% base it on the advice of healthcare and medical professionals. But if this cat, if I get told by people who do this stuff for a living that this is not a big deal, or that, yeah, there is some risk to it, but it's not high risk or whatever, I think this cat could be like real damn good. He's going to have to put some weight on. He's a little bit undersized for an edge rusher. That's what you do in the NFL. I'll take the risk. I think he is risk worthy to the point that he is the only guy that if he falls to 4 or 5, I'd tell Carolina it's worth moving up 2-3 spots to go get him. We'll find out if Rashad Beard agrees with me in just a little over an hour from now. Lulu Kesson at 8 o'clock. Mario Heron of the BetMGM Network at 9. Fight Club at 9:20. All that coming up on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Drew from Charlotte says, I wouldn't trade up for Abdul Carter, but if he falls in your lap, you have to take him. My fear is he turns out to be like Greg Oden. I don't have an issue with that take at all. Greg Oden was such an interesting case. Because Greg Oden coming into the NBA, we knew there were issues with the knees, and we knew because of his size that those issues were never going to get better. But you were talking about a guy who played a sport that was wildly impactful on his knees and at a size where people traditionally have lifelong knee issues. Now, it turned out to be worse than any of us could have imagined for the former Buckeye. But I understood the risk. The stress reaction for Abdul Carter is certainly an issue. It is certainly something that I would be concerned about. And a lot of it may have to do with Greg Oden flashbacks. That was a draft pick that tanked a franchise for a handful of years. So there is some concern about it. And I think it is very fair to have some concern about Abdul Carter. I also think this guy's a monumental talent. I am willing, if I am a Panther, if I am Dan Morgan, I am willing to probably go up 3 to 4 max spots. But again, it is also going to depend on the cost, right? Like, I don't know that I'm willing to give up 4 or 5 picks for him. I don't know if I'm willing to give up a first round pick next year for him. I'd think about it, is all I'm saying. I think this kid is going to be one of the most successful draft picks out of this field, out of this crop, provided he can stay healthy. And obviously, right? Like, obviously his health determines whether he's going to have a career or not. I'm telling you, if this stress reaction is something that ultimately does not impact the guy, I think he's Hall of Fame caliber. I don't feel as strongly about him as I did Jaden Daniels last year, but it's pretty close. I think this kid has the potential to be a bona fide Hall of Famer long term. He is the fastest off the ball that I have seen out of edge rushers in the last few years. The guy's reaction speed and his burst off the snap is as fast as I have seen anybody. This dude has athletic talent as an edge rusher that, you know what else I can do with him? I can stand him up and play him in an outside backer. I do think that he will probably need to bulk up a little bit. He plays at 250. That's his combine weight is 250, which I think is about the most accurate reading you're going to get. Showed up at the combine at 250. If you want to make him a consistent on the line of scrimmage edge rusher, I think you probably got to pack another 10 pounds of muscle on him. I think you got to get him to like 260. I think he can play at 250, but I'd probably feel more confident playing him at like an outside backer. And I do think he's fast enough. But there is only one concern that I have about Abdul Carter. There is only one element of his game that I worry about as we are now in officially scouting mode. The one aspect of Abdul Carter's game that I have a concern about is that when he edge rushes, he wants to engage in contact, which isn't inherently a bad thing. The problem that I have is that his hands aren't as fast reacting to an offensive line block as I'd like him to be. He's the first guy to contact when the ball is snapped. He is going to beat every other edge rusher to contact, which means he's going to be the first guy to prevent to provide a threat as a rusher. But he's not exceptional in his ability to see where an O-lineman is going to punch a hand and get rid of it, right? I'm talking about when that hand comes out to make that first contact, I want somebody that doesn't just have reaction to see ball, get ball. But as he sees the ball is snapped, gets that first step and turns the eyes up the field, I want him to be able to see where a lineman's hand is going. Is it coming to the neck? Is it coming to the chest? Is it going to the gut? And be able to get a hand on it, swim move, rip move, whatever, inside, outside, to be able to get rid of that hand so that a long punching offensive lineman, I'm talking about like one of those left tackles that's got a wingspan that's a mile wide. If that tackle is coming, is pushing Abdul Carter off the edge, and he's able to get a hand on Carter and then ride him up the football field, keeping that hand extended, now I've nullified Abdul Carter. Now, he is fast enough that he's going to beat that offensive tackle a lot of times. That's why I'm intrigued with him. But the longer the longer the offensive tackle he's up against, I'm talking the longer the arm strength, the longer the reach, the more they will be able to just ride Abdul Carter up the field and get him out of play. That's my big concern. He's explosive. He's a motor guy. He's as good with that first step as any D lineman I've seen in a very long time. But I have one concern. Get rid of that first punch. Get rid of that first hand. Make an offensive lineman have to throw hands at you multiple times. The more times that I make that offensive lineman have to put a hand on me, the more chances I have to successfully get rid of that, get up under that block, and cut to the inside to try to negate the pocket. We'll see. I like the kid a lot. So I said, I think if he falls, that's where I want to go. I think if he falls, that's an auto draft pick for me. Do I think he's falling to 8? I absolutely do not. I do not think he's getting to 8. But if he gets to 5.
All right. I just sent you Mel Kiper's mock draft 2.0. I don't know if you've seen it or not. And I don't know if this came out before or after the news of the foot, but he still has him going number 1 to Tennessee.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I sent it to you on X.
See, here's the thing. I think I like that pick for the Titans. Because I'm honestly, I think I've seen enough out of Will Levis for Tennessee. We talked a little bit about this earlier in the week. I've seen enough out of Will Levis that I'm comfortable letting Will Levis have a shot at the number one. Because I also think you go Cam Ward, you go Shedeur Sanders if you're Tennessee. Do either one of those guys, and I'll throw this at the great one, does Cam Ward to Shedeur Sanders, either one of those guys, do you think their plug autoplay and the Tennessee Titans are immediately successful? I don't.
No, I like both of them, and I really like Shedeur, but I think he's kind of undersized, and I'm not sure about how durable he's going to be.
I don't disagree with that.
I mean, how much did he really get hit? And he's going to get hit a bunch, especially going to one of these teams where he's going to be drafted.
I don't disagree. I don't think Shedeur or Cam Ward, if you were Tennessee, I don't think Shedeur or Cam Ward is an immediate franchise-changing quarterback. I think both of them are projects. Both of those guys are guys I'm going to have to work with and develop at the next level. If for no other reason with Shedeur, then can we keep it a buck outside of Travis? Shedeur didn't really have a ton of talent around him. He didn't have NFL talent around him. Shedeur is going to have to be developed to what happens when everybody else around you is better than you or is on par with you. In Colorado, he was the playmaker. There wasn't anybody else there outside of Travis Hunter that could do it for him.
According to Kiper, and I just looked up because I was curious about how accurate Kiper has been through the years, and there is like a mixed bag about whether he has been or hasn't. But according to him, who I guess is still considered the foremost expert,
sure,
Shador is going to the Jets.
That is number, where are they at? Where's their
seven?
Draft spot? Seven?
Yeah.
That checks out. I've actually seen a lot of Shador. I think yesterday, if I recall, I know Coward said he had him at like seven or eight. Kiper's got him at seven. And honestly, I think that's fair. Shador's a heck of an athlete. Like, no doubt about it, he's a heck of an athlete.
And he has Jalen Walker out of Georgia going to the Panthers.
I'm good with that. Honestly, I'm good with that. And I think that's going to be about as good of a pick that is going to be available there for if you're Carolina. This is also why I've said I'm trading back. Honestly. Because I think there will be guys available at 15 through 18 that are not a dramatic drop off from the guys, from the group of guys that you would be picking at 8. I think you can trade back as many as 8 or 9 picks and still be in that same realm of talent, and you can stock draft picks. I might be willing to make like 3 or 4 trades back, right? Trade back to 10, 11, then trade back to 15, 16, then trade back to 19, 20. Like, assuming there's going to be trade partners there. If you can find those trade partners that you can Belichick this thing and you can trade back 2 or 3 times, and now all of a sudden, even if it's over a 3-year span, you're sitting on 10 more draft picks and you gave up, let's say, 10 to move back, 10 spots to pick up 10 picks, by just making a bunch of mini moves, I'm all in. I am now fully subscribed to the Eagles philosophy. Every one of my drafts is going to have our fans going, what are we doing? How's this our move? Where's our sexy picks? And then you look up 2 years later and it's like, oh, Jalen Carter is real, real good at football, you guys. We just picked up a bunch of dogs. I'll tell you where else I subscribe because of the Eagles. It's not just this draft along the line. So I don't think this is like revolutionary or anything. I am not just a visionary and a revolutionary. I also think I'm going to start leaning on picking kids that are coming out of the blue-collar college football programs, right? Philadelphia just drafted every kid out of Georgia for 2 years. Georgia was winning natties. What was Georgia doing to win natties? Beating your ass at the line of scrimmage with big dudes. Just going and getting a bunch of Jalen Carters and busting you up at the point of attack. That was Kirby Smart's entire strategy. I don't think Kirby Smart's had a great quarterback come through yet. I think he's had a series of very good quarterbacks come through. I don't think he's had a great one yet. But they put 5 tanks ahead of him. On the defensive side of the ball, they've played some great quarterbacks and won because they put 4 tanks across the D-line. They just beat your ass at the football. And if they can do that, they can win natties. I am willing to just look at drafting guys out of that school, out of Ohio State, out of Alabama, out of the consistent top performers in college football. I'm just drafting all their linemen. I am down with that Philly philosophy. So we'll see if that moves the needle at all for the Carolina Panthers. But I'm interested to see what Abdul Carter looks like and if he falls 4 or 5 spots. That would be, and I think this is fair. So he's the only thing I'm trading up for if I'm the Panthers. I don't think there's another player in this draft that if you go, oh, he could have been a 1 or 2 pick and he's available at 5, I'll move up 3 spots. Abdul Carter's it. But now the mocks are coming out, even with the foot injury, the mocks are coming out saying most of the big dogs still have him going number 1 to Tennessee. I think Tennessee's trading down. If Tennessee trades down, a quarterback's going 1. If Tennessee trades down, a quarterback's going 2. So if Abdul Carter's hanging out there at 3, And there's two primary quarterbacks in Ward and Sanders that come off the board. Would he last to 4 or 5? If he lasts to 4 or 5, now I'm interested in making a move up to go get him. I don't know. We'll find out. We'll talk about this with Rashad Beard coming up here in about 40 minutes from now. Lulu Kasson of the Greenville News going to join us in the next segment. We'll see if there's any news on the football front for the Gamecocks. The women's basketball team as well. They got back to winning, not just winning ways, dominating ways, after that disappointing loss to UConn. We'll check in with Lulu Kasson. Hey, Nas Mario from the BetMGM Network at 9 o'clock, 9:20. Fight Club with the great Melonzo as we get set for Elimination Chamber. All that coming up as the show rolls on. Before any of it, however, ladies and gentlemen, sit back, relax, be enlightened, be entertained, be educated, be enthralled, and perhaps be aroused by Lonzo's Sports Flash.
All right, you threw me off at the last thing. I just maybe push the wrong button there. The Clemson Tiger basketball team will retain their, I'm not all there in the head right now, position inside the top 15 with an 83-68 win over Notre Dame last night. Clemson was led by Ian Shefflin's 24 points and 9 boards, and Victor Lockins 18-5. Jake Heidbreder added 14 off the bench. Clemson is on a 5-game win streak with 3 games remaining on the regular season and is 1 game back of Duke with a tiebreaker in hand. National Football League is considering to change the overtime rules moving forward. According to league executive Troy Vincent, Vincent said the competition committee is considering making the playoff overtime rules where both teams get possession, regardless of outcome of the opening possession, as opposed to current regular season rules. They're going to take the overtime rules from the playoffs and put it in the regular season. We'll see if that works.